Good afternoon. Welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived on awfradio.com. Let's go to line number two. And welcome back to the show, Larry Willis. Larry is the Secretary-Treasurer of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, which is a collection of all the transportation unions, over 30 of them. TTD.org is their website. Hey, Larry, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back with you.
Always a pleasure getting your point of view over the air and on to our listeners, and hopefully they'll be activated, at least educated.
Happy to do it. Absolutely.
At least educated. And there's a lot of education that needs to be done. We just got off the phone with Dan Troy. He's one of the Lake County Commissioners. Good guy, very union friendly, and we were talking about the very fact that Congress has failed to act on a long-term federal highway bill. And we're seeing, as a result of this, it's not like the roads are going to fix themselves. A lot of state legislatures are taking it upon themselves because they have to. I don't know when Congress is going to understand this.
And we've seen this across the country, quite frankly. You know, states after states are recognizing that the federal government too often in the highway world, in the transit world, and other places of transportation is just ignoring their responsibility and is moving forward with investments on their own. Either they're raising revenues through gas tax increases or finding other monies and investing in their infrastructure. That's great, but the reality is that we need and must have a national transportation system, and that's why the federal government's role is so critical.
And, you know, you've got a really good piece there, and it was posted, I see it was on the Huffington Post as well, but it's on your website, about the very fact that if we invest in transportation, if we ever decide to go in that direction and do it the right way, we're talking about rebuilding and strengthening the middle class. I mean, this is the best way. This is the best way to move America forward.
Well, there's no question about that. You know, it's getting to be more and more presidential season, and you know, you're going to hear candidates on both sides of the aisle talking about the need to invest in and grow the middle class. And we agree with that, obviously. And there's a lot of smart policies to get us there, but that one of them that can't be ignored is the need to invest and support our transportation network. You know, we all know that when you invest in a road or invest in a transit system, you create jobs on the construction side. For every $1 billion you invest, you have 20,000 plus jobs that you create just on the construction and related activity. But what also happens is you leave behind really great operating jobs, operating that system and maintaining that system. And in fact, more jobs are created in transportation and infrastructure on the operating side. And those jobs, in turn, pay higher wages on average, especially across the middle and lower income, than other jobs in the economy, in part because of the high union density that we see in most areas of transportation. So it's a win-win in terms of fixing infrastructure that hasn't been invested in decades and creating good jobs now and creating really good jobs into the future.
So, Larry, is it still the gas tax? Or, I mean, because you got the Tea Party there that doesn't want to raise taxes in any shape or form. Is that still the stumbling block here?
Well, that's definitely one of the stumbling blocks, and there's no question that the gas tax, we believe, from a long-term fix is the way to go. It can be modest. It can be adjusted for inflation. There's other ways to do it so that it doesn't hurt, middle-class Americans in a real problematic way. But we think that's proven to be the best way to fund our nation's, at least highway and transit system, long-term. There is a bill that moved out of the Senate, had a slight funding, had about a $16 billion funding increase over 6 years, which is fairly modest. That did not rely on the gas tax, relied on some other sort of goofy pay-fors that really don't add up to a whole lot of extra money. The House is considering their own bill, and I think it is unlikely that they will consider a gas tax. They may consider other ways to try to raise additional revenues. Whether those will be good ways to do it or bad ways to do it, we're just going to have to wait and see. But until you decide that the gas tax or some other, real reliable way to fund highways and transit is something you're willing to embrace, at best, you're just going to have a kick the can down the road mentality as far as how we fund this stuff.
And where are we right now with funding?
Well, you've got a highway program that's going to expire at the end of October. The revenues, once again, are running out of the highway trust fund, and that sort of, when that happens, is sort of a moving target. Originally, it was going to be the end of the year, and now, because states aren't spending a lot out of the federal treasury, because they're not sure how long the program is going to last, there's actually revenues being built up there, so it may last a little bit longer into the new year, but not much. So, as I said, the Senate has passed their version of a six-year bill with modest funding increases. The House is considering one of their own. Paul Ryan, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, is going to have to figure out a way to fund the program. And then we've got the House Transportation Committee is writing the broader bill and the real some difficult policy issues that are part of that bill.
Yeah, and buried in that bill, too, isn't there some, like, Buy America components?
Well, there is. And, you know, when Congress does these big infrastructure bills, whether it's on the highway transit side, which they're doing now, or aviation or rail, what we've always advocated for and argued is that, you know, our transportation network and our manufacturing network can be linked. And if we're going to invest in transportation and infrastructure, let's do it in the smartest way possible and really maximize job creation by strengthening our Buy America laws. And we've had, quite frankly, some good success over the last several years on that. And in this bill, we're trying to improve the Buy America standards, specifically on the transit side, increase the number of domestic content up to 70%. Under the current Buy America rules, we think it's a little too easy for companies to get waivers when they claim that, you know, domestic content is not available.
Uh-huh.
So we want to limit those waivers as much as possible, strengthen the amount of content that has to be in, you know, transit vehicles, buses and trains, and definitely looking at this bill for a vehicle for that.
So you're saying you want to get it up to 70% American. Where is it right now?
It's about 50 or 60%. We'd like to go to 100%.
Well, yeah.
We've been pushing for that. We have to be sort of realistic in this Congress. But we're going to try to get as high as we can.
You know, this is a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you make it 100%? I mean, wouldn't that be the patriotic thing to do?
It's absolutely the patriotic thing to do. And, you know, people, you know, in the past have claimed, well, you know, there's not enough domestic content. Well, you know, if the federal government says that, you know, that's going to be the standard and invests the kind of money and creates the market in transit and rail, for example, that we think there needs to be, domestic manufacturing companies will be able to produce that content. And they've shown that on the rail side for sure. And they're showing it on the transit side.
Yeah.
So there are ways to get to that. We've partnered with a lot of different individuals to create that market. And it's a smart, again, if you're going to invest in transportation and infrastructure, let's figure out the way to maximize good jobs.
Yeah, obviously, if there's not a demand for it right now because they're going elsewhere, I mean, if they stipulate the demand that it has to be domestic content, they will, you know, if it's almost like if you build it, they will come.
Exactly.
That kind of a theory there.
Exactly.
All right. What's going on with driver assault and transit safety? I know this is a big issue. We've had a number of incidents here in northeastern Ohio dealing with that. Is this becoming a national thing?
It really is. It's not only a national thing, but it is a national thing that is occurring on a regular basis, on a weekly basis. We are seeing reports about bus drivers, particularly, that are being assaulted. And, you know, some of the video on this is horrific. Some of the stories that we're hearing are horrific. We've known it's a problem for a while, for a couple of years now. Last year, the Department of Transportation, at our request, and ATU's Amalgamated Transit Union, Transport Workers Union, and some other unions, held a summit on this issue to sort of figure out ways to address the problem. As the House and Senate consider their highway transit bill that I talked about earlier, we are urging action on this issue, and specifically a mandate that the Federal Transit Administration come up with rules and regulations and procedures to better protect these drivers. You know, there's a lot of different solutions out there. A lot of people have looked at, and some transit providers already have you know, plastic or some type of separation between the passenger and the driver partitions. And you know, I think that's one solution that, that folks have to look at. But you know, broadly, we need our federal regulators to figure out the right way to solve this problem.
Yeah. All right, just a couple minutes left here. Government shutdown. Boehner said over the weekend that it's not going to happen. Well, let me ask you this. Were you surprised, like everybody else, that he's stepping down?
Well, I don't think there's any question that I was surprised at the timing. You know, obviously, he had been getting a challenge from the right for a long time. Mark Meadows, a Tea Party darling, had filed a procedural motion to challenge the speaker at the end of July before Congress went into their August recess. So I think there was definitely speculation that he would be challenged. His decision to step down and when he did it, how he did it was definitely a surprise. You know, I guess the silver lining here is that, you know, it appears, you know, and he's made comments late last week and over the weekend that, you know, there's not going to be a government shutdown. I think that he's made some type of deal to, you know, to keep the government open, at least on the short term, and sort of used him stepping down as leverage to get that from the Tea Party folks. And hopefully we can, you know, we can avoid another government shutdown. I mean, and we have to remind people how terrible that is when that happens. You know, sometimes I think folks have short-term memory and forget just the terrible impact shutting down our nation's government over really insignificant squabbles can have. So I know that's what we're doing. We're reminding people of the impact that it had last time on our transportation system. You have hundreds of thousands of federal employees furloughed that don't get a paycheck. It's really disruptive to how we run our government.
And it's costly. A lot of people think, oh, if you're shutting it down, it's going to save us money.
Yep.
It's far from the truth. It's more like $24 billion it cost the economy when they had the government shut down 2 years ago. So it's,
yeah, no, it's a crazy way to try to govern. You've got, you know, while critical, you know, for example, air traffic controllers, because they're essential, would still operate and still be operating our air traffic control system. You know, you have other, for example, really safety sensitive stuff going on long term at the Federal Aviation Administration that's going to be sidelined, modernization plans, you know, upgrade plans, what have you. And by the time you stop and start those type of programs, you look at the books at the end of the day, and you've spent more than any. And by the way, Congress correctly goes back and pays these people anyway.
Right,
and they should. So if we're going to pay these people anyway, why don't we just have them stay at work?
There you go. All right, we're going to button it up there. Larry, great job. Thank you so much.
And
we'll talk to either you or Ed next month, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. TTD.org for more information on what he was talking about. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Economic Policy Institute and former Congresswoman Mary Rose Okar. Until then, all of you have a wonderful day.
This has been America's Workforce, heard right here on WERE-AM 1490, courtesy of the American Workers Radio Network. Tune in every Monday through Friday for another hour of Worker Power with Ed Flash Ferris. America's Workforce is produced by Labor Tools, powered by BMA Media Group.